Hi, everybody. This is the All Things That Go Bump in the Night podcast. I am Kelly, and I have one other special guest for you guys tonight, my brother-in-law, Josh.
Hey, guys.
So we're going to do things kind of like how I normally record, where I do research, and then, you know, we discuss what I research and everything. So I thought that, you know, we do a place here in the Portland area.
Yeah.
I'm super excited about it. But yeah, it was nice having Mickey. It's a shame she can't be here for this one.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. On her business trip, of course.
Of course. We had to have the week off that she's traveling.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, at least you caught her before she left, though.
So that's good, night with her was really nice. Mm-hmm. But yeah, should we just kind of jump in?
Yeah, we can jump in. Yeah, whenever you're ready, I'm ready.
Okay, so I'm choosing McMenamin's Edgefield Hotel. Am I pronouncing that right?
Yep, McMenamin's, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, in 1854, you know, legislature ruled that counties had the responsibility to care for the county's poor. As a result, the first poor farm was established in the West Hills of Portland in 1868. The hillside farm occupied 160 acres, now known as Washington Park.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I didn't know it was Washington Park.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. Okay. There's so many of them around here. There's tons of McMenamins. I can't... Well, I'm not sure off top hand, but...
Well, the hillside farm was not McMenamins. Mm. It's just where the first poor farm was.
Gotcha. Okay.
It ended up being shut down due to deplorable conditions of the buildings. And the Multnomah County Poor Farm was then built to replace it on a budget of $100,000, which in today's money, counting inflation, equals $2,688,929.
Wow.
The main building was built by a plastering crew and Swedish immigrants working as carpenters and bricklayers. In November 1911, the farm opened in Troutdale, Oregon. 211 residents moved in, and it was the largest county-funded relief institution in Oregon. In 1914, the farm housed 302 residents who helped manage the farms and the crops.
Okay.
The farm built their infirmary wing in 1934 to care for the elderly and the sick of the farm. By 1935, the population on the farm was 614 people and grew to 345 acres.
Wow.
Yeah.
345 acres?
Yep.
Oh, my goodness.
So, in 1939, the Works Progress Administration built a doctor's duplex. The WPA also built an incinerator, sprinkler system, and sun porch in 1940. In 1947, the name was changed from the Multnomah County Poor Farm to the Multnomah County Home and Farm. In the 1950s, though, the farming operations stopped and changed their name to Edgefield Manor.
Okay.
In 1964, the property was converted for multi-use. The main building was used as a nursing home, and the external building was the Edgefield Lodge for emotionally disturbed children.
Huh.
Yeah.
Wow. So they did everything on here.
Yeah.
So what's the exact definition of a poor farm?
Let me Google that real quick, because I think it's a farm where the poor people would come and stay, and they would basically work on the farm to pay for their living.
That's what I was guessing, but I'm sure that there's some sort of stipulation that, you know what I mean? Some sort of, like, they might have to work. I don't know. I'm curious. I'm curious.
So basically, according to Google, a poor house or poor farm could be part of the same economic complex as a prison farm and other penal or charitable public institutions. Poor farms were county or town-run residences where paupers, mainly elderly and disabled people, were supported at public expense.
Okay. It's almost like its own little community.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, pretty much. So, in 1972, the county proposed closing the facilities down. which a lot of, you know, when you look into the history and stuff, a lot of big buildings that were nursing homes and stuff, they all get shut down.
Yeah.
Which is a shame, because that's what you and I do for a living.
Yeah, exactly.
So an estimation for necessary renovations 3 years later totaled $400,000, which, counting inflation in today's money, is $1,784,439.66.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Dang. And that was how much? What did you say was
the start? 400,000. 400,000. Oh, to start it, it was 100,000.
100,000. Wow. Mm-hmm.
So, in 1982, the remaining three residents at the facility were relocated. In 1985, county committees wanted to remove all of the buildings except for the jail as a way to market the land to potential buyers, which, as I was saying last night when I was doing my research, I was like, I didn't realize there was a jail there.
Yeah, that's weird that they wanted to keep it to market the...
The buyers, yeah.
Yeah, that's odd. That's different.
That's what I thought, too.
Definitely different.
So in 1986, the Troutdale Historic Society challenged the decision to remove all of the buildings. They claimed that the buildings had historic significance and needed to be preserved. In 1990, Edgefield was added to the National Register of Historic Places. That same year, the facility was bought by McMenamins. It features restaurants, pubs, gardens, movie theaters, a golf course, wedding locales, and an outdoor concert venue that hosts international music acts. So you've been to other McMenamins. Are they all like that?
Not all of them, no. Well, I could be wrong, you know. Actually, the two that I have been to, I know one is like a bed and breakfast.
Okay.
That's not far from here. That's out towards like Cornelius, Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
Then the other one that I was at, my brother actually had his wedding at, and that one I know has a bar. It has different, like, there's like buildings 1 through 5, I want to say, and they all host different things. So they have different activities. So I know that they all have more than just a bar or more than just a bed and breakfast. They're all something, you know, they're all a little bit different, which I think is also a really cool thing.
So I'm on the McMenamins website right now because I wanted to see how much it would cost to stay the night there. There it is. Just because I'm really curious. I did that with the Stanley Hotel too when I did the Stanley. Let's do arrival date. We'll do next month, the 8th, January 8th to the 9th. For two adults.
I want to say the one in out towards Cornelius, that one I want to say that they actually do tours and everything because it's supposedly really haunted. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there is like a big list on things that you ask somebody around here from Oregon, you know, and you're like, hey, you know, have you heard about the McMenamins out here in Cornelius, and they're like, oh, you know, if they don't know some story, a friend knows a story. Yeah. You know, they know somebody that knows a story.
Well, when I was, what I did was I Googled haunted places in Portland.
Okay, yeah.
And the Edgefield Hotel is actually one of the most haunted locations in
That's the one
Portland
in Troutdale,
area.
Right?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. I haven't been to that one. I'll have to go. Mickey would love that.
So one night, in a queen room with a common bathroom, so you share a bathroom, for two adults, $80.
That's not bad.
That is not bad at all.
That's not bad.
For a queen suite with a private bathroom, $113 a night, or $130.
With a private suite and everything, that would be fun. And I'm pretty sure they do breakfast, you know, of course, breakfast in the morning. And then I think it's not just a stay. I think you get more than just a stay.
So that's for the standard rate. Their Beer 101 package is...
Beer 101?
Yeah.
Oh, that's my alley.
I know,
What's
right?
What's that about?
So they'll put together two taster trays of their handcrafted ales, and after sampling what we have to offer, you'll receive a growler filled with your top choice.
Wow.
Packages include overnight lodging for two brewery taster trays, each with samples of 6 McMenamins ales and a growler filled with your choice. They also have the Hammerhead package, which is $170 a night for that same room.
Uh-huh.
Or no, that's not the same room. For $210 with the Hammerhead package. It's lodging for 2, dinner and breakfast at the Black Rabbit Restaurant or Power Station Pub. So
you gotta choose.
Yeah. You guys should, like, you guys didn't get a honeymoon, so you guys should go and do just a honeymoon there.
I'm curious. Google the one in Cornelius, because we were thinking about getting married there, because there's a beautiful courtyard. They have, I mean, many different, it's like almost like barn style, you know, little hut, like hut type deals, but not really huts. They're huge.
So the Cornelius Pass Roadhouse?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, they say it says they do weddings here.
Yeah, so we almost got married there. And does that one, I want to say that one does the whole bed and breakfast. You can pick, you know, the suite and all that.
Yeah.
But does that one have the tours? The haunted tours?
Because
you would think the Troutdale one and this one would.
I know that the Troutdale one does do tours during, like, Halloween. I'm having a hard time finding the... I found Centralia, but they don't have the Cornelius one on here.
Hmm.
Could it go by, like, a different name? There's the Crystal Hotel in Portland, Anderson School in... Oh, that's Washington. Gearhart Hotel in Gearhart, Oregon. Grand Lodge in Forest Grove. Hotel Oregon.
Maybe I'm thinking the Forest Grove one. You know what? It might be Forest Grove.
Would you recognize it if you saw a picture of the front?
Yes. Okay. Oh, yes.
So here.
Okay, I don't recognize it. I don't know. Anyways, what I was getting to is, they're really, really nice. But the cool thing about them is the history. Like you were just, you know, the history on them. And not only the Troutdale one, but all of them have some sort of history.
Well, from the looks of it, they go with buildings that have historical significance.
Okay.
Like, they've got the Kennedy School here in Portland, Old St. Francis School in Bend, the Elks Temple in Tacoma, which is for the Elk Society.
Yep.
Which is kind of like... their own form of, like, oh my gosh, I'm drawing a blank. The Freemasons.
Mm.
They're like their own Freemasons.
Okay.
They were actually the ones that built that cemetery in Spokane that's super haunted, Greenwood Cemetery or Thousand Steps.
Oh, yeah.
They were the ones that started that. But yeah, it seems like they're really cheap.
Yeah, not too bad. No. Not too bad, especially for the cool view that you get, you know, the...
Yeah.
That...
It's not like the Stanley Hotel where, you know, the Stanley is super old as well. It was built in the early 1900s.
Uh-huh.
Originally, it was like a TB retreat for people with tuberculosis. But I, you know, when we were looking into it, I was reading, like, reviews and stuff like that, and a lot of people were saying that the furniture was broken. Like, they just didn't keep up with it at all.
Oh, really?
But from what I'm seeing on McMenamins, they actually keep it updated, you know. They keep to the old charm of it, but they have it to where it's not run down.
Yeah.
Which I think is awesome.
To where you still get that old style feel and everything, but you know, you still got that comfort of today.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
Yeah, if I ever get married.
That would be so much fun.
If I ever get married, I'm choosing one of these places. Plain
they're
and
very
simple.
Popular around here. They are. They're a very popular, not only marriage spot, but a place for, you know, you to go and just have the casual beer after work.
Yeah.
You know, there's tons. You can do all sorts of activities. I feel like we're promoting it.
Come to Portland, guys.
No promotion. we have not been paid by...
Yeah, I wish.
Yeah.
So, anyways, back to the topic on hand. In 1990, The Edgefield was added to the National Register of Historic Places. The same year, it was bought by McMenamins. Features all of those, you know, things that we just talked about. Mm-hmm. That's the history of the building. I didn't get too in-depth with it.
Yeah,
Just a little bit of the background into it.
Yeah.
So, they have a blog. The McMenamins have an actual blog. And on it, they were discussing how they keep a logbook of all of the paranormal experiences that guests have reported to have experienced.
Oh, my gosh.
They actually call it their ghost log.
Oh, really?
And if you ask to see it, they will bring it out and they will show it to you.
Oh, man.
And I think that's absolutely amazing. So here's just some of the things that are written in the ghost log. Sensed a middle-aged / elderly woman standing over the bed. Fought out of sleep, no one was there. I was doing housekeeping about a month ago, and I was standing at the foot of the bed when I suddenly felt something firmly grab my ankle and not let go until I jumped away. I looked under the bed, and there was nothing. Hotel housekeeping staff.
Oh my gosh.
I felt a quick breeze, and the strongest, sweet scent came over me. It smelt like flowers, kind of perfume-like. I lay in bed for an hour and saw shadows dancing on the walls, the ceiling, and the windows. Spirits were flying around the room. It was a great encounter.
They sound, like, friendly.
I know.
All of them.
Well, except for the last one that I'm going to read off.
Okay, okay.
I mean, it still kind of sounds friendly, but a little too friendly.
Yeah.
So, a woman informed us at checkout that she awoke to someone standing over her. That afternoon, housekeeping re-entered the room after cleaning it to find pillows tossed about. Then we had another guest feel a tap-tap on her chest in the middle of the night. So this is the one that I was talking about. I was taking a shower, then all of a sudden I felt a hand grab my butt. I screamed and grabbed my towel to dry off and get my clothes on. Right as I spotted my shirt, it flew up in the air. Hotel staff actually responded to it, and they said, we apologize for that one. We'll have the manager speak to the ghost in question.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
So, like, do people stay here for the ghost encounters, or do they stay there?
I'm sure a lot of people do.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people stay at, like, the Stanley Hotel for the experiences.
Okay.
That's kind of why I wanted to stay there. Mm-hmm. There were also people that commented on the blog, and this is what they said. Jason Rousseau is one of those commenters. My name is Jason. I'm 45 years old. I stayed in a room at the Edgefield with my girlfriend, who is now my wife, when I turned 21 years old. It was just a random idea we planned for my birthday, to just chill out and do all the pubs on the property to drink and eat food, and also experience staying in the old hotel for the night. At the time, we had no clue how haunted the property was. We've heard short stories about the history there, and also had multiple friends that had worked there mention stories of paranormal experiences that employees and guests have had. But at 21 years old and beer thirsty, we never thought twice about the stories. So after a long afternoon of good brews and food, we headed to our room we booked on the top floor. I don't remember what room number we stayed in. All I remember is that it was down a long hallway. When we got to our room, we realized there was no TVs or a restroom in our room. Only desk lamps lit the big vintage-style room. I soon found the restroom situation way down the hall outside the room.
Oh, that's right. My parents were telling me about that.
Really?
Yeah, they stayed there, and my dad was really upset because you have to go
down the hall.
Completely down the hall to use the restroom. And there was another thing you had to do to leave, to, you know, that was just the comfort of staying in a hotel.
Mm-hmm.
That was the one bad thing that I've heard.
Yeah.
That's right. Other than that.
But when you think about it, when these buildings are made and everything, it's not common for there to be separate bathrooms.
True. Very true.
So if they're keeping with the old feel charm of it, you know, without completely changing the entire building, especially with it being on the National Register, they can't really do renovations like that.
Yeah, that's true.
So.
Definitely. And I'm sure a lot of those rooms don't accommodate for that, too.
No. And that's what I was saying, too, when I was reading out the reservations and stuff, is that there's a common bathroom.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's a secret or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, when I opened the door to the restroom, I instantly had a strange feeling walking in. The bathroom was big and had that old-school vintage feel to it. As I looked around, making my way to the urinal along the wall, I felt as if someone was watching me the whole time. like someone was in there with me, but there was nobody but me. I shrugged it off like whatever. I visited the restroom a few times before sleep time. We were up around midnight doing adult things, winky face.
Ooh.
Still a little buzzed from the 6 gallons of beer I drank earlier.
God, this guy sounds like he had an awesome night.
Right?
Man.
I woke up around 3 a.m. to visit the bathroom again down the hallway. As I made my way down the hallway to the restroom, I couldn't help but notice the strange, odd paintings on the wall, feeling like the paintings were looking at me as I walked by them. As I walked into the bathroom, I had that anxiety feeling of someone watching you again. So this time, I ducked down and checked the toilet stalls to make sure nobody was in there. I saw nobody in any of the stalls and felt better about it. The anxiety wasn't as bad. FYI, there are about a dozen toilet stalls and old school urinal along the wall. Big bathroom. So as I was walking up to the toilet stalls, as soon as I started peeing, I instantly felt like someone was standing directly behind me, next to me. As I peed, I kept looking left, right, and behind me. I felt whoever was there was very aggressive about letting me know it was there. I wasn't scared, but very cautious about the overwhelming feelings I was having. As I finished my whiz, I obviously had to look down to tuck myself back into my shorts for about 5 seconds. As I was tucking it back in, no joke, a stall door opened directly behind me. I froze, standing there in complete shock. It was so spooky, I couldn't even move to look at who it was or what it was. And I honestly could not move, like it wouldn't let me move or look at it. I listened to whatever or whoever was there walk to the door entrance, leaving the bathroom. As soon as it opened the door to leave the bathroom, I finally was able to move and look towards the door entrance. And I saw what was a person's body quickly exiting the bathroom door as it closed. I literally ran to the door with the thought of who or what the hell was that. I made it to the door in about 3 seconds, opened the door quickly, looking both directions down the hallway, and there was nobody there. And there was absolutely no way someone could have disappeared into a nearby room without me seeing them. No way.
Wow.
As I walked back to our room, which was about 30 yards away, I swear on my life that whatever was in the bathroom with me was now staring at me again through the paintings on the wall down the hallway. Every painting I looked at on the way back to our room was staring at me. I'm no pushover, nor am I a drunk dummy, lol. I'm a believer in only what I see and feel myself, and I'm telling you right now, the Edgefield is absolutely haunted. I saw it with my own eyes. And the hospital ended up... The hotel ended up responding with, "Oh yeah, that's a good one, Jason. But, sorry about the voyeuristic ghosts. We'll report them to the manager."
I love their responses.
I know.
Their responses are amazing.
I know.
Yeah, well, it happens.
You know?
Sorry about that.
It's pretty awesome.
Oh man, that would be a fun stay.
It would.
I've never had any... I mean, I've gotten those feelings, mm-hmm. you know, that everybody gets, but I've never... I'm like this guy was just saying. I'm a strong see it for myself
yeah.
and feel it, you know what I mean? And I've never really seen,
mm-hmm.
you know, but I mean... If they're friendly, I would like to.
Can you imagine how you would have reacted if you went to that abandoned house with my sister and I when
oh,
we were younger?
Oh gosh, no way.
Like, you would be a big believer after that.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Like, I'm sure Mickey has told you some stories from what she remembers, because, mm-hmm. you know, we talked about it. She's definitely repressing a lot of memories.
Yeah.
And it freaked her out so bad.
Yeah.
Like, Mickey is probably one of the strongest people I know. She's not scared of hardly anything.
She is, yeah. She's a strong woman, that's for sure.
And for her to tell me, I don't like to think about it because it scares me that much. Like, I had no idea it scared her that much
yeah.
when we were growing up.
Yeah,
you know?
She doesn't really talk about it with me. I mean, we have a little bit, you know, with the time we've been together. It's
yeah.
been, you know, quite a while now, but...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, she... It's weird, though, because it scares her, but at the same time, she... has that like for it. She gets that she has that infatuation for those scary
stories. The adrenaline
stories.
Rush
yeah,
from it.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas you get me, who it like pushed me into the paranormal, you know, mm-hmm. wanting to do ghost hunting and watching, you know, I watch Ghost Adventures all the time with my client. Every Tuesday we're watching Ghost Adventures.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's just a big part of who I am because of what we experienced.
Yeah.
So it's crazy to see how different we are when it comes to to everything.
Definitely. Definitely.
So Stella is another commenter who stayed at the hotel. Hi, I'm Stella, and I was actually up at Edgefield just a few days ago with some family and friends. They all went off to do things, so I walked around and eventually went up to one of the stairs porches because the downstairs porches are always full. Anyways, I was up on the porch reading a book. I was alone up there and it was very quiet, but I was nose deep in my book. I was reading It by Stephen King.
Oh, wow.
All of a sudden, a tall, dark figure caught my eye from the other side of the porch. It was turning towards the doors to go inside, but then it was gone. I know that Edgefield is haunted, and I can see spirits. There are two in my house, and I've seen some in other places as well. But whenever I see one, it does still catch me off guard. I had this gut feeling that it was the spirit of a Confederate soldier that I had just seen, but I felt a little crazy because I didn't know why I was feeling such a specific feeling. Just a few hours later, I bought the book on Edgefield's history in the gift shop, and I found out that there had, in fact, been a Confederate veteran who had lived and died there.
Wow.
With finding that out, I was totally surprised, but now I don't feel as crazy. I really believe that the spirit that I saw was up there on the front, on the upper porch, was that Confederate veteran. Okay, so now that we've had a little bit of a break.
Yeah, right? Kids.
So Aubrey Lynn said that we stayed a few days ago as well, and my mom's room she was in with my sister, the lamps flickered one to the other repeatedly at 2 a.m. after they unplugged them. I came into the room after from the bathroom, and they told me about it, and as they were telling me, the alarm clock started flashing 2:03 a.m. No alarm set. We unplugged it, and it turned off, laughing, and it turned off. We laughed about it, and then it started flashing 2:03 again. We checked for batteries, and there were none. My partner came in and hit the clock and convinced my mom it was something else so she'd go to bed. Not our first encounter, but it was hers, LOL, and it definitely spooked her.
That's crazy that the alarm clock is unplugged and everything, and it was still flashing. Mm-hmm. That would make me a little bit freaked out.
I don't think it would, because I would my mind would just say, oh, there's still just enough internal juice.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, definitely.
I mean, it's one thing to say how you'd react, it's another thing when you're actually in that situation.
True.
So
true.
I have no clue, honestly.
See, I'm such a history junkie. I think I would
mm-hmm.
I would instantly be like, why 2:03? And I would start instantly like the last story where she goes down and finds out that there was a soldier, you know, mm-hmm. 'cause she bought the book. And
yeah.
I would instantly be doing research like what happened at 2:03, you know?
Yeah. I have no clue. So, Amber said, we stayed at Edgefield October 6th through 8th, 2019. We were on the second floor west wing about midnight the first night. As we were dozing off, I'd had no alcohol. We both heard a little girl's laughter. To our knowledge, there were no little children staying in the rooms nearby. It happened again the second night. We didn't think much about it and actually joked about the girl's ghost hiding behind the armoire until we got home and found out that the hotel is actually haunted. So Gail commented, my daughter and I are scheduled to enjoy a short staycation next month during her Thanksgiving break, and since I was in the area anyways, my dog loves the park next door. I figured it'd be best to check in person, and also because I hadn't explored the actual hotel, just the grounds and pubs. I should mention that we're both clairvoyant and I'm an empath, so supernatural / paranormal encounters are not a rare occurrence for us, but I had no idea Edgefield was that active. Immediately when I stepped through the double door entrance, I felt an electric buzzing beginning in my ankles and slowly crawling up my calves, stomach, and thighs. It was quite a rush, so I just stood there for a few seconds and let it run its course. I get insights and picture flashes of life during a location's greatest and worst moments in history. As the hotel office staff showed me the room I'd be staying in, we passed by a stairwell and I saw, sensed, and felt a large group of young adults, possibly in high school, running down the stairs, such as takes place between classes, possibly in the 1920s. I felt uneasy and rushed and intimidated in the rabbit bar area, and certain parts of the hall felt odd. The office said there was a full flooding in September. Some dumb teen did pull the pipe, did pull-ups on a pipe in the third hallway. I wonder if this increased or decreased activity. I'm now really looking forward to our stay.
So was it a school at one time?
I don't think so.
I wonder why she's all teens.
It was the home for the emotionally disturbed children.
Yeah.
So that could have been it.
Could have been a bunch of, yeah. Gosh, that one's kind of creepy.
Yeah.
That one would be... See, that one I think would be kind of interesting to see out, you know, to be able to see stuff like that mm-hmm. or get a glimpse of something.
Yeah. Okay. So this last comment is Annie. She said, I just stayed here for two nights on a spur of the moment getaway with my husband and four kids. We stayed in the family room in room 301 on the third floor. It was a great comfy room. The first day we were there, we had a very busy day of exploring the grounds and seeing Frozen 2 at the movie theater, so we weren't in our room or in the actual building very much. But that evening, my older kids and husband went to the hot springs, and I stayed back with our two-year-old and gave him a bath. While I was walking down the hall to the bathroom, I heard a baby crying and what sounded like little girls laughing. I didn't see anyone, but figured it was coming from one of the rooms. During the night, I kept hearing footsteps going up and down the hall. Then this morning, my son and I were coming out of the bathroom when I looked down the hallway when I saw a tall black man with dark curly hair wearing white painter overalls walking towards us. I didn't hear his footsteps or anything, which I thought was strange, but I figured it was just a worker. He was looking right at me, but had an expressionless face look on his face, which I thought was also weird. He also pretty much came out of nowhere. It was super weird and definitely gave me the chills. I'm hoping it was just a worker, and I'm just getting myself worked up over nothing. So, that was all of the research that I did. There's one other thing that I'm going to read, and it's Thought Catalog. And it was an article that I found on there from a woman who had just visited there in, I think, 2015. I just got to find it now because...
How many comments were there when you were on their page?
Those were all the comments that I read off.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
There's the Thought Catalog article. I had it pinned, but for some reason my pins disappeared. So this was written December 29th, 2015 by Amy Venezia. And it's titled, I Had a Series of Bizarre Paranormal Experiences in the Most Haunted Room of McMinniman's Edgefield. It all started with my boyfriend and I deciding to grab a drink and some Cajun tater tots at this cool place near our house. McMinniman's Edgefield is the name of the place. It was built in 1919. Wrong, it was built in 1911. Used as a county poor farm, as a country poor farm, until it was turned into Edgefield Manor, where they treated tuberculosis patients. It was used for that. It was a
nursing
home. There's
so many different things that people are saying that it was.
Yeah. It was then turned into Edgefield Lodge, home for emotionally disturbed children. That's then it was changed into a nursing home, which is not true because they were operated at the same time.
Yeah.
Until McMinniman's purchased it and made it into a really cool property of several bars, a funky cool hotel, and fire pits to drink around in the wintertime. The night we decided...
So a lot of them are similar then. Because that's exactly what the one over here is like on... there's one over on Cornelius Pass.
Yeah. Yeah, we were talking... You had me look that one up last night.
Well, there's even a closer one that my brother got married at. It's right over here, right by the Intel over here, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. There's so many of them. Tons. Sorry.
No, you're good. So the night we decided to visit for happy hour, my boyfriend and I were walking around the back of the hotel. I stop and I stare up at all the windows of the hotel rooms. I pointed up to a certain section and I said, that part of the hotel is haunted. My boyfriend went on to tell me that indeed there were rumors it was haunted. He then presented a challenge to me. If I could go inside and find the haunted room, and we go to the lobby and found out that I am correct, he will stay in the haunted room with me for the night. I love challenges. I marched right into the hotel and, like a spirit bloodhound, picked a staircase to walk up. I stopped at the second floor and looked down the hallway. Yep, I picked up the scent. I quickly made a left turn and passed a couple of rooms until I got to the one that I stopped dead in my tracks in front of. No pun intended. I pointed to the room and I said, "That one, room 215. We proceeded to go back down to the lobby, and my boyfriend asked the receptionist, "Can you tell me which one of these rooms is the one that is supposed to be haunted?" She answers back, "Oh yeah, I can. It's room 215, and it is most definitely haunted." I smiled, though did not gloat. Well, maybe I did a little. I was more excited about staying in the room than the fact that I am thoroughly impressed with my boyfriend. We booked the room for a later date, and we walked out of the hotel. As we walked towards the parking lot of our car, I couldn't help but feel like eyes were burning a hole into the back of me. I slowly turned around and looked up at the hotel room windows, half expecting to see a figure staring down at me. I didn't see anyone, but I didn't have to. I know whatever was there knew I was onto it, and knew I was coming back. I typically don't get nervous on the way to stay at haunted locations. I have dealt with this my whole life, and it is not something that I am in fear of. I mean, when you see the things that I've seen, it takes a lot. However, I will admit that on the drive back to the hotel, I found myself a bit nervous. I wasn't sure of what exactly. I knew I was a bit perplexed that our room wasn't going to have a bathroom in it, that we would have to walk down the hall to shared bathrooms every single time a need to pee came on. That was something I wasn't too thrilled about. It felt more than that, though. I felt like I was about to experience something I hadn't experienced before, and that is saying a lot in the paranormal sense. There we go. I went to the lobby to check in, and the receptionist this time is a male. He goes on to tell me how brave I am to stay in the room and asks if I would like to read the ghost journal that guests have shared their stories in. I politely told him no, that I would look through it come checkout time. I didn't want to be expecting anything or read about things that may influence what I myself would see or feel. I think that's smart.
That is very smart, yeah.
Making our way up the stairs to the room, I'm not gonna lie, my stomach was in knots. Right before I put the key in to unlock the door, I hesitate. I stood there and silently said a prayer for protection for both me and my boyfriend. Most times, I feel this is a given. I am always asking for it, especially as a medium. So I do usually take the time right before entering a room to reiterate what I already have been asking for. This time I did. We entered the room, and I went to the bed and sat down. My boyfriend went to the windows and looked out onto the rest of the property. He pretty much knows to let me be as soon as I enter a place. I closed my eyes and began to see if I could see, hear, feel anything from whatever it was known to haunt this specific room. I took a good few minutes being silent and taking it all in. After a while, my boyfriend couldn't stand the silence anymore, I suppose. He plopped down on the bed and said, "So, do you know who it is yet?" For the first time in our almost 4 years together, I had no idea how to explain to him what I had just seen. I turned around and jokingly said, "Well, it's going to sound nuts, but it's kind of a thing. Not a spirit. It was never in human form. It is," taking a big gulp, "like an ET." I sat silent, trying, really not ready to go into it, and hoping he would not ask any more until I was. No such luck. He sincerely wanted to know what I meant. Probably half to tease me and half because he had never heard me say anything like that. So it's like an alien.
Yeah. Huh.
I began to explain that as soon as I came into the room, it presented itself to me. It was small and, well, not in human form. It looked like an alien. It tried to be aggressive with me at first, and I just kept telling it, "Thank you for letting me be here," that I wasn't there to attack it or try to kick it out. I wasn't there to label it or call it evil. I just wanted to talk to it. Here's the story and why it is there. I decided to turn on my spirit box, in which I keep the logs on my phone. Interesting story. 2 days after returning home from that night, my phone crashed and had to be completely replaced. There was nothing they could do about it and nothing they could do to save anything I had on it. I not only lost these sessions, but also all of my photos and text messages. I had not backed my phone up in a long time. This happened to me once before after I stayed in a haunted location. Anyways, the words started pouring through the spirit box as my boyfriend and I just stared at each other. The first words were, "Get out." Yep, you heard me right. Get out. That is when I started explaining what I mentioned above, that I wasn't there to judge it. I wanted to connect with it. It then began saying words like being, space, travel, learn, planet, gather, information, intelligence, lonely, misunderstood. I thankfully wrote down the words as they were being said. Then it stopped talking. I felt extremely drained. It was like 3 p.m. I said I wanted to take a nap and my boyfriend was game for that. We decided to lay down, and as I did, I thanked the little being for communicating so clearly and for letting its guard down with me. I just lost, like, I don't know. I don't think that's an alien.
No?
No.
What do you think?
I really don't. I think it's a ghost, not an alien. Why is an alien only showing itself to one person, and that's one medium?
Yeah.
And then communicating through a spirit box.
Yeah, what's a spirit box?
It's like, it's kind of like a Bluetooth speaker, only it runs through AM noise. So like AM channels, it'll scroll through and then certain words will pop out of the white noise coming out.
Oh, okay.
So you can...
I believe in aliens, though,
for sure. I do, too. I'm a big believer in aliens, but I don't see it...
Yeah, just one person.
Out of how long has it been?
And those are all the stereotypical things about aliens, like misunderstood, gathering information, you know, stuff like that. But, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't really read through this when I was doing my research. I was just like, oh, there's a thought catalog on it. I'll read this on the episode. And now I'm, like, really regretting it because I'm like...
It's still entertaining, though.
It is, I guess.
I like it.
So... After about an hour or so, we woke up. Ready to leave the room, we go walking around. Grab a drink and some food. I got ready, and when it came time to leave, grabbed my purse off the desk and made sure the keys were still in there before I walked out the door. Habit of staying in so many hotels. I couldn't find the key. My boyfriend says, "I watched you put it in your purse." In that tone, that kind of implies that I'm obviously overlooking it. I checked again, and nope, it's not in there. He starts looking everywhere around the room, mumbling under his breath that he saw it with his own eyes, me putting the key in my purse as I laid my purse on the desk in front of the bed. We spend a good 4 to 5 minutes looking for that damn key, until my boyfriend sits down at the little table by the window and stares forward towards the bed. I hear him say, I found the key. I could tell by his tone that this was going to be interesting. So as I look at him, I'm thinking it's going to be in my purse. I follow the line of sight from my boyfriend's eyes to the bed and see the key. It is lying perfectly under the bed, lined up with the hardwood flooring. It is directly at the edge of where the bed begins. Now, if you look at the picture, you will see there is barely a crack between the bed and the nightstand. If the key had somehow fallen through, it most likely would have fallen through and hit the floor, causing it to be at least a little crooked. Not landed perfectly, in a perfect line, as if it had been methodically placed there. Come on, load. There we go. Oh, see, that's the photo.
Oh.
So.
Hmm.
I mean, it still could have easily just landed like that.
Yeah. I was thinking like a key. I was for some reason thinking a key.
So was I.
And I was like pointing at something maybe.
Yeah, nope. Key card.
Yeah, that's right. Hotels. Huh. That rug's bugging me.
I know. It's bugging me too.
Yeah, so you want to explain what the picture looks like for the viewers?
Oh, okay.
Or for the listeners, I mean?
So we've got the edge of the bed, the nightstand, the rug. The rug is kind of not lined up perfectly with the nightstand, so it's all kind of, like, bubbled up. And the key card is exactly like she said, underneath the bed, in a straight line, you know, with the bed.
So it's like the typical, like, where you have the bed pushed against the wall, the two nightstands on each side of the bed, it looks like. But it looks like the one nightstand, maybe the key card was sitting on the nightstand, and there's that little gap from where the bed to the nightstand, you know, the little side table nightstand, whatever you want to call it. And the key card fell, and
landed perfectly.
Yeah, you know when you drop something, like a credit card or something, have you ever dropped it, and it lands perfectly flat, and it makes that, like, smacking noise?
Yeah.
That looks like what it would have done, honestly. Because it looks so flat, that paper is so nicely, like, pressed and perfect that the key card is sitting in. I guarantee you, they set it on that nightstand, and it...
Well, and it looks like the... If you look at the rug and everything, too, with it being bubbled up like that, it looks like the nightstand had moved.
Yeah.
And... that could have easily, if it was just placed precariously on the nightstand.
Yeah.
You know, if the nightstand moved, it could easily have just fallen off.
Mm-hmm.
But.
Yeah, you never know.
I mean, we won't know unless we attempt to debunk it.
Yeah, so. Right.
We both looked at each other without saying a word. I grabbed the camera and took a picture of the key, and without speaking, we walked out of the room, both ready for a strong drink. We sat at the table, kind of at a loss for words. It was just something unexplainable. It may not seem like a big deal now, but you would have had to have been there. Knowing there are two people who knew the key was in the purse, seeing how it was physically impossible for the key to land in that position if it had been on the nightstand, which we both knew it wasn't. We also pointed out how many McMenamins hotels we had stayed at over time, and how none of them had religious connotations to them. However, in this room, there were very subtle Christian influences, such as both lamps on the nightstand were wooden and had a cross carved into them. There was a verse from Amazing Grace painted on the wall in front of the bed. It felt to me like maybe this was being viewed as evil by those who had experienced it. We eventually made it back to the room, and when it came time for sleep, I made sure I communicated a whole slew of boundaries. I didn't want to be touched. I didn't want my energy to be taken. I didn't want it to try and overtake me. I didn't want bad dreams. If it wanted to communicate with me, I was willing. It took me a long while to go to sleep, and during that time, I felt another spirit come forward. But not this being, but an Asian woman, possibly Japanese. I felt she was in her 60s, very frail, but hard working. I saw her out in the field picking beans and potatoes and other vegetables. There was a man she loved, but she had lost. I got that much from her before I couldn't hold my eyes open any longer. That is when the struggle began. I felt like a character out of Star Wars with a lightsaber, deflecting incoming blasts and defending my energy field. Once I concentrated on one area, I felt it trying to sneak into another area. This went on all night. On the recordings from the night, you can hear me tell my boyfriend that he is trying 30 ways under the sun to get to me. Hours passed and you can hear me jolt out of my sleep and jump out of the bed. That is because I had been touched. You can hear my boyfriend ask, "I guess 31 worked," to which I reply, "Huh?" as I was panting and gasping for air. He went on to reiterate what I had said earlier, that the 31st way must have worked. He found it funny. I did not. Unless you've been touched by a spirit, or in this case, something else, there is no way I'm going to be able to explain it in a way that you're going to understand. It is just something that goes all the way to your bones. It is electric and shocking. It is in that split second all of your humanism dissipates and you are just a soul in a three-dimensional world without a shell. No protection, vulnerable. To say it is intense is an understatement. The next morning, I woke up and immediately called room service for a coffee press. Zero sleep. I mean, zero. I checked the spirit box. Pretty intelligent string of communication at around 3 in the morning came through like to hang out, hallway. Okay, then. While waiting on the coffee, I began researching what others had experienced in room 215. Evidently, when renovating room 215, workers found what appeared to be small animal bones and a pentagram drawn on the floor. That explains the crosses in the room and the mural painted on the wall. If the hotel believes satanic rituals may have taken place in that room, and then they started receiving guests, only to have one after the other say that they were experiencing paranormal activity, I already know they did a blessing ceremony on the property before they opened it to ward off any negative spirits. They must have really felt or known something to go to do that from the get-go.
How does she know they did that?
I don't know, because I haven't seen anything like that in any of my research.
She's just assuming things now.
I think so, yeah. What it explains the most to me is how that being found its way there. When rituals are done of that nature in that area, it opens up a realm or portal, to be exact. An opening where all dimensional beings can come and go. After drinking my coffee, I took my camera and snapped a few pictures around the room. When I got home and got them on my computer screen, I found two to be very, very intriguing. One is of what I saw as an alien-type face in the window. The second looks like a Japanese woman's face in the window. So I think that's supposed to be the alien's face, but that looks like it's just like a speck of dust that got
or caught. A lamp behind them. It almost looks like a lamp, like a reflection of a lamp behind her.
It could definitely be that, too. I was thinking, like, if you use a flash, it can cause it to kind of sparkle.
That yellowish light.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then the Japanese woman. I still see the speck of dust or the lamp.
Yeah. I see kind of a leg, a tall leg. And then maybe, like, a jacket. You see, like, one of those open jackets.
Kind of.
And then, like, the little hands right here, maybe. But that's, like, still, that's just, like, it's in the same spot as that smudge that on the last picture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. These pictures made the story even worse.
Yeah.
These are horrible pictures.
So on my way out the door to go check out, I thanked the little being for not freaking me out too bad. From some of the stories I had just read over coffee, it was kind to me. And then last page. Oh. And that's just links to different stories.
Huh.
But, yeah.
Interesting. I don't know. I'm such a, like, person that I have to see it and feel it for myself. Like, some stories will get to me and some things I'll believe, you know?
Yeah.
But it's like, I don't know. It's such a wide range in what people believe and what people say and what is really going on with the whole spirit world. And, you know, like, I'm not saying I don't believe, but at the same time, I'm not saying that I 100% do believe, you know? Like, definitely there's spirits, of course, and, you know, but I'm not sure about the whole, like, you know, moving alien things and...
I mean, I've seen them move stuff myself. It takes a lot of energy. They have to be really strong to move stuff.
Yeah, and if they can do stuff like that, then why haven't, you know, other things happened, you know? I mean, not that I've seen, at least.
From what I've seen, it's typically not ghosts that are moving things. It's typically, like, the evil stuff. And at that point, they're just kind of saying, if I can move this, what else can I do?
Yeah.
You know, and that's what they thrive on, you know. They do things to scare you because they get stronger the more scared you are.
Yeah. My dad's house is haunted.
Really?
Yeah. It's really... Oh. That's one place I do believe. I've heard... The only ghostly experiences that I've had is I've heard in my dad's house footsteps up and down the hallway, like the creaking of the hardwood floors.
Yeah.
And so I guess what had happened is my dad has that little side of property next to his house, you know? And the previous owner that was there in, like, the 1900s was building, like, almost like a carport area on the side of the house. So he was leveling rock out. He had a bunch of railroad ties behind and was bringing in bunches of loads of rock. And he had a big, one of those big rollers and a traco. And he was just, you know, shoveling the rock.
Was this in, like, the late 1900s?
Yeah,
like late 90s?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And he had put the bucket up. The story goes, he put the bucket up to go underneath, to go do something, work on something, move something, I'm not sure. And the bucket had collapsed and crushed him on the side of the house. And he was there for multiple days. And
oh, wow.
I guess the the dad of the guy that lives next door, like across the street from him, lived there at the time. And this is, the story's just been passed down. And but anyways, crushed him. And so then my dad, after my uncle had actually owned the house, then my dad bought the house from my uncle and, you know, heard the story. And so my dad was a bachelor at the time, hadn't met my stepmom. And so he's sleeping there all alone. He's by himself. And my dad's a construction worker. Yeah. So he knows very well the sound of construction.
Yeah.
And, you know, heavy machinery and stuff like that. And he said, laying in bed, oh, by the way, his their room, there's a big window where his the headboard of his bed is. And outside that window is where the carport area is,
okay.
On the side of the house. And so he said he'd be laying in bed and he'd hear chains rattling, like, for, like, you know, hooking stuff up or tying stuff down. You know, they have these big chains and these big ratchets almost, and they link them down, and it ties, you know, when you hook machinery up on flatbeds, you lock them down. And he said he heard stuff like that. He would hear the screeching of the tires and the tracks, you know, when you go to stop or move. And so he got up and he went into the living room, and my dad he's not a big fan on ghosts, you know, like when he gets scared, he gets mad. And he goes in the living room. He's a bachelor at the time, so he slept on the couch a lot of the time. 90% of the time, you know, he slept on the couch. Me and my sisters and brothers would be gone for the weekend. You know, we lived with him, but we'd be gone for the weekend and be at my mom's house. And anyways, so he'd be laying there, and one of my dads, he's 6'3", so one of his pet peeves is when you leave the cupboard doors open.
Because he'll smack himself.
He'll smack his head on him, yeah. And so he goes in, makes a sandwich, you know, lays back on the couch, watching TV, you know, goes in, gets a glass of milk, you know, just relaxing.
Yeah.
And he turns off all the lights and turns on a show. And he had his glass of milk and his food, you know, that he's just kind of munching on while he's falling asleep. Falls asleep, and then the TV goes to a channel to where there's nothing on it. It was just static.
Yeah.
And he's like, what the heck? And he turns it back to a channel, you know, and goes back to sleep. And wakes up again to the same exact thing. And he's like, what in the hell is happening? You know, thinking he's rolling on the remote or something like that, you know? Turns the TV off completely. Goes back to sleep. Hears footsteps down the hallway. The footsteps that I, you know, have heard. I don't know if it's just because he's told me the story or, you know, if I really did. But hears the footsteps, you know, and starts to get more freaked out. And gets up to go in the kitchen to get... my dad's a huge milk drinker. I mean, he drinks it by... the gallons, you know, goes in to get another glass of milk. And
that's where Kenna must get it from.
Yeah, right. And every cupboard in the door. Oh, and by the way, I left this part out. It's my dad's pet peeve that the cupboards stay open. So he put magnets on them.
Oh.
So that if you go to like swing it closed and it's like
bounces
still
back.
Bounces back or still a good, you know, 4 inches from closing, magnet will suck it in and it'll close the cupboard doors for you. And so he goes in, and every single cupboard in the kitchen, drawers, cupboards, were all pulled out just enough to where the magnet wouldn't latch them back together. You know, just enough to be open, just to piss him off.
Wow.
And he's like, what the hell? This is getting bad. And he turned off the TV, he got his glass of milk, he goes to go back in the bedroom to go to sleep. And he's walking down the hallway, and he says he felt a big... brush behind him, like a big gust of wind behind him, and he like kind of got the chills and started walking faster, and then heard footsteps walking faster when started rushing. And he said he turns around and he screamed as loud as he could. He goes, get the hell out of my house. He goes, this is not your house anymore. I want you to leave. This is my house now. And from then on out, never heard nothing like that again.
Wow.
And, I mean, there's still stories of, like, my sister staying there, and she sees a guy in a big, like, tan coat, like a heavy, heavy coat, which I'm guessing might have been the guy that lived there.
Yeah.
And then my mom, one of her pet peeves is...
Cheryl?
Crooked pictures.
Oh, God.
She hates the crooked pictures on the wall, and she says that she'll wake up, and she likes this ghost. She's invited him back.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, and my God, Cheryl.
It makes my dad so mad because now things happen again. And my dad has kept them away for so long, and Cheryl thinks it's funny. because she'll wake up and pictures on the wall, which they have a huge picture wall of, like, us graduating, you know, growing up, mm-hmm. and, you know, getting married, grandkids, just, I mean, a huge picture wall. And she said 90% of those pictures will be crooked when she wakes up in the mornings. And she'll, you know, like, it's one thing for every so often a picture to fall out of place and get crooked, you know, but yeah. to wake up and for them all to be one direction, turn slightly to the right or slightly to the left, mm-hmm. you know, when she wakes up. And
she kind of reminds me of, we did the Sally House, which was a house that was, it's rumored to be the most haunted house in Kansas. Mm. And they were told that it was a little girl named Sally, and the wife, like, the husband was like, no, this is not a little girl, like, this, there's something wrong
yeah,
here.
Yeah, yeah.
And the wife was like, oh, no, it's fine, like, started buying her toys, got her her own little
my
crib,
goodness.
Like, went crazy over it. And then, like, he saw the little girl, and the wife got pissed because she was like, why is she showing herself to you and not me? I'm the one that's accepting it.
Mm-hmm.
He started getting attacked, and he was just like, are you fucking nuts? Like, they, yeah, it was intense.
Yeah, I think if there is such thing as, you know, the whole spirits and stuff, I think they would definitely know and feel how you, mm-hmm. what you're feeling. And I think that might be another reason why I haven't seen or heard anything, because I'm like, I get mad
yeah.
when I get scared. And I think I would push them out. I would, mm-hmm. you know, if they tried to do, I would be the stronger. I would make sure I was the bigger, stronger person,
yeah.
you know? And I think maybe they get the feeling of that, and they're like, you know, he's not friendly, maybe. We don't mm-hmm. want to talk with him or stay away from him, you know?
Yeah.
Even if they are friendly, they know that I wouldn't react well.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't take them in well.
Yeah.
So.
I don't know. I just think it's hilarious, though, that Cheryl's like, please come back.
Yeah.
We should probably end this.
Yeah.
It's been,
it was fun.
36 minutes, and we gotta get heading out.
Yeah.
So.
Say goodbye to you guys and
yeah.
everything. Gosh, it was nice of you guys being here, though.
Yeah, it was really nice.
It was fun.
We had a lot of fun. So we have the Facebook page, the Twitter, the Instagram, all things that go bump in the night podcast. And next week should be our normal week with Mouse. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Have a good night, everybody.